All rise in the courtroom and to those listening on stream, for the dishonorable badger is entering the scene. Apparently doing this as a day job simply was not enough, so let your jaws drop to the floor, 'cause we can't make this stuff up. Welcome back to the Legal Funhouse. We put the fun in dysfunctional. It's crazy in the Legal Funhouse, but weirdly educational. But every single one is remarkably true. One of them went to law school and is more than qualified to talk about the strangest cases from the strangest people alive. And the friend that he brought along barely passed eighth grade, whose legal experience lies within parking in the fire lane. Welcome back to the Legal Funhouse. We're just as confused as you. It's finally time for the Legal Funhouse, and without further ado, every single one is remarkably true. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode 26 of Boozy's Legal Funhouse. I am your host, the Boozy Badger, Boozy Barrister, here for Sex in a Time of Cholera. With me tonight, as always, is our certified legal layman, Alkali. Alkali, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
And before we get going, as always, I do need to read off the names of our $5 level and above Patreon supporters here at the Legal Funhouse at patreon.com/lawyersandliquor. So, a special thank you to Dragor, Tezcat, Magic Jag, William DeRoche, Beaton, Dozer the Trash Panda, Mama T, Uncle Kage, Evelyn Klein, Lisa Lupe, Lufus the Raccoon, Netherlinks, Pandemonium, Petrov Neutrino, Buddy, Good Boy, CC Otter, Chroma Hydra, David Hunter, Eddie the Weather Fox, Ghost Goat, Gray Shane Gallagher, Head Fox, and Jason Knight, John Michael Carden, Julie Esslinger, Jess James Lack, Mark Whipple, Michael Blocker, Nikolai, Otto Poom, Red Fox, Romeo Rabbit, Scuba Fox, Serathan, Tekel, The Dragon Show, Tiny Voices, William Kennard, and Ziggy. And as you just found out, we record this live, and I don't do any fucking editing. We record it, I cut it, I put it on the podcast server. I always say it keeps the je ne sais quoi of a live performance. The real truth of the matter is I'm just fucking lazy.
Well played, well played.
If you are watching this live, because this records live on Twitch, if you are watching this live, and let me very quickly turn off the notifications before your subscription thing comes through. I say live on Twitch, and you're like, oh, I'll subscribe in the middle of the fucking podcast. Make sure we get some audio in there.
The fact that you caught me trying to audio bomb our show is a little disappointing. Well played. Well played.
Oh, I forgot where I was. Let's just go.
Yeah, you know why? Because today is a holiday. We are working, which is why we are in robes, pants.
It is. I am a government lawyer. Today is a government holiday when we're recording this, meaning I have not done shit today. When we were like, we're going to record, Alkali sent me a message and said, I'm just going to come to the recording in a robe. And I went, you know what? Sounds like a good idea, man. I'm going to do the same fucking thing. It works. Like, neither
We're
one of
professionals.
Us. Neither one of us is dedicated enough to put pants on to do this tonight.
Dedicated enough to put pants on, but I am considering buying a smoking jacket, so my robe-wearing ways are a little bit more, I don't know, fanciful.
Oh, I love the fact that we're now concerned about whether or not you're fancy enough as you're doing a podcast in a robe.
Excuse me, I wear a top hat in my day-to-day life. I am basically a Batman villain.
Actually, for all of our listeners the other day, Alkali does wear a top hat. Wears a top hat all the fucking time. And the other day, I referred to Alkali as not being one of the wealthy gays. We were talking about the difference between the wealthy gays and the non-wealthy gays. I was like, you're not one of the wealthy gays. And Alkali's partner, Zandy, said, excuse me, we have a top hat. And I said, excuse me.
That's right.
I have seen cartoons of Depression-era hobos. Having a top hat does not mean you're one of the wealthy gays.
Excuse me, my top hat does not open at the top, and I don't keep beans in it. So I think I'm doing okay.
It is time, with that wonderful thing, it is time for the disclaimer. Boozy's Legal Funhouse is an informational, educational, and hopefully entertaining podcast about law, legal principles, and legal cases. I am an attorney. I am not your attorney. The way that I would become your attorney is you would come to my office, tell me about a legal issue, I would agree to represent you, hand you an engagement letter, which you would then sign, and pay me a retainer of my choosing. You don't just get to PayPal me a buck and say that I'm your lawyer. At that point, I would be your attorney. However, you can't do any of those things. I'm not in private practice, and I don't represent private clients. What I am not is your lawyer. No attorney-client relationship exists. Nothing that you are about to hear is legal advice. It's a discussion of basic legal principles. Please, for the love of God, do not go out there and say a fat man on the internet told me this. It will not hold up well in court. So,
Hold on. I just need to point out, last time we recorded, you taught me about insurance companies adding clauses that have happened to them, i.e. the flaming guitar on top of a truck or fucking in the backseat of a car. And now I can't help but notice PayPaling you a single dollar has entered your repertoire.
Yes, my repertoire.
My repertoire.
Thank you, fucking Elmer Fudd over here, ladies and gentlemen. Elmer Fudd.
Eddie Twine. I love that that's in there now. Is your legal disclaimer as we do stupider and stupider shit to you going to get... Because that could be the whole show.
Yeah, I'd like the entire show is just me giving a disclaimer on ways you can't make me your lawyer.
You may not hold me in the desert with a bag over my head. Boozy, that's from a movie. No.
Also, that's from a movie. Yeah, they did it there too.
The lawyer's life is an interesting one.
So, unfortunately, because we are recording these somewhat back to back to kind of come up to speed, I don't have a lot of legal news this week.
Makes sense. That makes sense. It shouldn't happen that often.
Yeah, you know, it happens all the fucking time. But I just don't have it. I'm sure that somewhere.
Hey, that legal system we have? Oh, yeah, there's news of fuck-ups all the time. God damn it.
The Philadelphia District Attorney, Larry Krasner, has won the challenge of his impeachment in the Court of Appeals of Pennsylvania. Are you familiar with that at all?
No, not even remotely. I read about D&D. That's been my week.
Well, this is D-A-N-D.
There. Nailed it.
Larry Krasner was actually elected in Philadelphia County as their district attorney, the top law enforcement officer of Philadelphia County. He's currently in his second term. When he was elected in 2017, he was a very progressive district attorney. He decriminalized several minor things, basically by saying, I'm not going to prosecute these charges, so you might as well not arrest these people. He basically said, we're not going to seek bail for some nonviolent crimes. And the people of Pennsylvania have just, you know, really enjoyed that. They've gone completely batshit.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, shocking.
Yeah, they just, like, the dipshits came out of the woodwork. Like, how dare he hamstring our police, the honorable police officers of the city of Philadelphia. Yeah, the ones who firebombed a city block back in the 80s, you know, that honorable police department.
Group. Yeah, okay. As long as we're all talking about the same group here, God damn it.
Like, he came in at one point and he just cleared house of prosecutors that he thought were not upholding the standards of the office, that they thought were abusing prosecutorial discretion, and he got rid of a bunch of them. When a House Select Committee was like, we're going to investigate the rising crime in Philadelphia, he was like, yeah, I'm not going to come be a part of your fucking show trial. I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to participate in this.
I already like this guy.
And a failure to disclose past representation of an activist who supported a convicted murderer, which that's always bothered the fuck out of me when they go back and they look at a lawyer, because Krasner was not like a lifelong prosecutor. He won the DA having a long career as a criminal defense attorney.
Real? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Like when they elected him, when Philadelphia County, when the voters of Philadelphia County elected Larry Krasner, they elected him based on his platform of, I'm going to reform the DA's office.
Well, it sounds like he did a bang up job.
And then
got banged around and kicked out, I'm assuming.
Well, no, yes, maybe. the thing is, in Pennsylvania, you can impeach a district attorney the same way you can impeach a lot of people. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives, which was GOP controlled, said, we're going to impeach Larry Krasner. We're going to impeach. We don't like the fact that he's a progressive in the DA's office. We're going to impeach him.
Oh my God.
They issued articles of impeachment against him.
How'd that go?
Well, Krasner challenged it. It made it to the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court, which Pennsylvania's appellate court system. Like most states have, you know, your trial courts. Then there's what we call the intermediate appellate courts, which the best thing to analogize it, you know how like there's the U.S. District Trial Courts, and then there's the Circuit Court, and then there's the U.S. Supreme Court, right?
Okay, yes.
Most states have that same setup. They have the trial court and what we call the intermediate appellate court and then the final appellate court, and that's in most states called the Supreme Court. Pennsylvania has a bifurcated intermediate appellate court system.
So you added a fourth one.
Well, not really. We added a second type of court in the intermediate level. There's the trial court, and then there's the Pennsylvania Superior Court, and that's above that is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And then there's the trial court and the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court, which is overseen by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And it's kind of like if you're looking at it in like a box diagram, there'd be the Supreme Court at the top, then two lines going off of that, one to Superior Court, one to Commonwealth Court. Then those two lines would both go to one box at the bottom that just said trial court.
Your diamond of law is the diamond of law.
Yes, the diamond of law. The Superior Court handles shit like criminal appeals. It handles most civil cases. The Commonwealth Court handles appeals and, in some cases, has original jurisdiction, which means it is the trial court of record, for cases against the Commonwealth and its entities.
Okay, so specifically for Pennsylvania. It's just for interior Pennsylvania nonsense.
Okay, here's a good example. If you sue Bob, and Bob takes an appeal from the judgment, that would go to the Pennsylvania Superior Court, all right?
Okay.
But if you sued the Pennsylvania Department of Bob, and Bob took an appeal, it would go to the Commonwealth Court.
Hold on. Are you telling me the state that controls the courts decided we need our own court system for all of our fuck-ups?
Well, I mean, like, are they really fuck-ups, though? I mean, if we win, are they fuck-ups?
You created the court of you better win. This is the monopoly of law. You're passing go and taking the 200, then going back three spaces and going, you can't do this.
I mean, sure, we can. The idea is if we just had one court system for it, because Pennsylvania is not a small state. It's a large state. It's an old state. There's a lot of law. There's a lot of agencies. If we just had everything going through the one court system, it has been long experience that the Superior Court will get clogged up with so much shit where people are suing the Commonwealth.
Okay, I would like to point out now that you've just found the solution to that was, well, all of our personal fuck-ups, if we put them over here, that takes care of the whole problem. Dude, there is an underlying problem.
No, of course not. Of course not. Works fine. Yeah, you got to remember what I do for a living. Remember who I work for.
In that case, you're doing a bang-up job. Well done. If you were a corporation, I'd be smiling all the way to the bank. Holy shit.
So anyways, they filed the articles of impeachment against him. Krasner challenged it. It went to the Commonwealth Court. The Commonwealth Court came back last week on the 12th and said, the House of Representatives actually did not have the constitutional authority to impeach you for these things. They only had the authority to impeach for misbehavior in office. And the court said that's not misbehavior in office. We won't consider that misbehavior in office.
Doing what you believe in. Oh, he's truly misbehaved. Oh no.
Yeah, you know, like he's doing something that he believes. It's so much worse than that lawyer who told people to give the bankruptcy trustee, COVID.
Oh yeah, no. That he obviously. Equal to, it's on the same line as like if you had a court system for your general public and a court system only for your state. Same line, exactly. It's the same. No, don't get to do that.
Now you said big corporations and and the law and all that, and everybody always says, well, the law is always on the side of the big corporations. Maybe it is.
Maybe.
Right. However, this will make every...
I love a good however when it comes to corporate finance. Oh, good.
This will make every doctor in the world happy because doctors... If you ask doctors who the most fucked up insurer is, and I know several doctors, by and large, they all respond with United Healthcare.
Okay.
They're like, we hate United Healthcare. We're not fond of them. All right?
Dude, I've been in hospitals where they're like, okay, yeah, we want to help you, but we don't understand your insurance, so come back after you're dead? Okay, thanks.
So, United Healthcare just lost a case in Texas.
This is just a great story. It's a feel-good story.
Right, just right off the bat.
Feel-good stories.
Major insurer loses case. How much money do you think they lost?
Well, it's a major insurer, so it's either going to be like $2.3 million or $80.
You were closer the first time. $2
million. Yay!
They lost $2 million. Do you want to guess how they lost $2 million? Because this is the part that makes it better.
Okay, I'm hoping they didn't insure somebody who was an obvious candidate for needing the insurance. A very obvious... They were pulling some shenanigans and tried to say, no, we don't cover cancer, we cover cancer, something like that, right?
No.
Oh.
They overpaid medical providers to the extent of $2 million. They had an audit that discovered that they had overpaid low-T physician services and its related groups. Following a review of it, low-T physician services came back and said, we'll give you $25,000 back.
Oh, my God.
So low-T sends out copies of the settlement proposal to UnitedHealthcare with copies of the check. They send it out six different times to various addresses used during negotiations from UnitedHealthcare. They send it out a seventh time with the real check that was then sent into what's called a lockbox account. Basically, we're gonna put it here for safekeeping. UnitedHealthcare admitted that it received at least two copies of a September 5th, 2018 letter and that the check had been received on September 11th. After the usual procedure, the lockbox personnel, which was Wells Fargo, deposited the check and sent the letter in to UnitedHealthcare's tracking system.
What the fuck?
The next day, UnitedHealthcare sent an email to the lawyer for the doctors and said, no, we reject the settlement offer of $25,000 for the $2 million, but they'd already accepted the check.
What the fuck?
The deposit meant that they had accepted the check.
I love this. I love this.
They said that there was no, this is called accord and satisfaction. Like, you have a claim and somebody offers, you know, here, you know, they, you have a claim against me for $1,000. I send you $100 and say, I'll give you this $100 and full and complete satisfaction. And if you accept it, you've agreed, okay, this $100 settles my claim. This is accord and satisfaction. We have agreed that this is sufficient payment, right? They argued at trial, UnitedHealthcare argued at trial, there was no accord and satisfaction because we weren't really aware of the settlement at the time the check was processed, right? The court came...
But they got the emails.
Yeah, the court came back and said, if you'd been paying attention to your mail, you would have known about it.
Oh my God, yay!
So UnitedHealthcare lost out on $2 million.
Yeah, I love, you know, finally, comeuppance is such a weird word, but so nice.
Right? It is, isn't it? It's fun to hear those stories. You know, it's so much better than Man Bites Dog.
I love Man Bites Dog.
You would.
I have some legal news for you.
Oh, what'd you do?
I didn't do it. This was my father.
Oh, God.
So if my dad was recently robbed. They broke into his house while he was gone. And my dad came home, and the people who robbed it went straight to the second floor. So my dad had been home for a few minutes, putzing around in the kitchen, and had no idea anything was wrong, and then goes upstairs, and the whole house is overturned up there.
Oh, my God.
And the police, he called the police. They came. They told him to meet him outside. He went outside, and that's where the legal news comes from. Because if your house is robbed and the cops are going through searching for people, you need to wait outside. And my father did not find that acceptable. He's like, well, I'll just wait in the garage. Like, no, sir, you got... argued with the detective that he should be allowed in his house because, and I quote, my coat isn't heavy enough. I want to go inside.
I am
They are
cold.
Searching to see if people are still in the house. And he is arguing with not one, not three, five officers that he would like to go inside.
I love the fact that your father's reaction. I am cold.
I'm cold. I would like to go inside.
Sir, there may still...
He said it just like that.
There may still be burglars in your house, sir. Yeah, but they're warm.
Exactly. He had the heat cranked up. Not allowed to touch that thermostat.
It's my fucking house. Why do the burglars get to be warm and I gotta be cold?
So that was new information. Very new. I was not aware of that one. You're stuck outside if you report a burglary.
Is your dad over? He's like... As I said, I don't edit this shit. So, just to be clear, is your father okay?
My father is absolutely okay. More going through all this, as he stated to me, they took all of your mother's old jewelry, but your mother did not buy nice jewelry because why would I buy a diamond when you can go to the costume store and get a way bigger one that looks nicer? So he says, I'm pretty sure they stole a few $100 of prop jewelry and then dropped the bomb on me as he pointed to the bed and said, but you know what really gets my goat? They didn't even bring their own bag. And one of the pillowcases is, he made the bed. He has not replaced the pillowcase because they're going to catch him, Boozy, and they're going to bring back that play jewelry. But more importantly, he's going to get back his matching pillowcase, which he has no idea how to replace.
Occasionally you say shit that makes me go, how is this man an adult?
Dude,
and the conversation we had last week when we were recording, after we finished recording, Uncle and I talked for a few minutes every time, and we were talking about our mortgages, and I was talking about how I had taken care of an issue with my mortgage company where we changed our homeowner's insurer, and the mortgage company had not yet received the notice, and they sent me a forced place letter, and I had to take care of that. And Alkali said, yeah, I don't have to do that because I don't pay my insurance through my mortgage. And I said, what? Why? It's so much easier. Everything's bundled together. And he goes, yeah, but they charge me $5 to do it. And fuck that.
What?
And it's not like that would make sense if the conversation hadn't started with Alkali telling me about how he's had to fight force placement on his goddamn home insurance before because he forgot to send them the new insurance information when he renews.
I've got an alert now. I fixed that problem. It's one of my 30 alerts that goes off every day. One of them just says, hey, it'll be fine. And then the next one says, maybe.
Now, I got off of the call last week after that. I'm thinking, how does my learned dear friend think saving five a year, is more important than that? And then he tells me his father got robbed, and the most upsetting part was they took my pillowcase.
One pillowcase.
A new fucking bed. They should have taken them all. I can't justify spending $80 on a new sheet set for one pillowcase.
He won't. I'm going to keep track of how long it is before that man gets a new pillowcase. Oh, I'm going to keep track of it.
So, I almost hate to go into this now. You said at the beginning about the legal news, and you mentioned last week with Geico and the STDs.
Ah, yes, my favorite.
Well, our case today is sort of on the same thing. It is about people being sued for sexually transmitted diseases.
Ah, God bless America.
Citation is Meany v. Meany, 639 SO2D 229, Louisiana, 1994. That's right, Louisiana, the legal system that makes every lawyer in the United States go, eh, fuck that.
I'm still getting over the names are the same. Is this a married couple?
It is a married couple.
Oh, this is going to be a shit show.
It's an STD case. Is this a married couple? It was a married couple. Yes. I mean, like, I think we can all assume, like, I love that the name's Meany v. Meany, too, because they have kids. Well, as we'll find out in a moment, they have kids. So I want to just think that one of them was like, oh, that's little Meany and that's big Meany, when they were, like, fucking pointing out the kids. You're big Meany? No, I'm little Meany. Big Meany's my papa.
That's the one beating me. He's Meany. I'm just sorry.
So, Linda Meany and Lawrence Meany met in November of 1973 and were married by May of 1974. During the 3 years prior to their marriage, Linda had dated three other men, and you know, she had sex with them. It was the 70s. Things happened.
There you go. Right. Things happened.
And this is a quote directly from the case that just sets the home. The man whom she dated from March of 1973 through September of 1973, a period which overlapped her relationship with another of the three, was examined and tested prior to this trial for both genital herpes and venereal warts.
Oh.
That sets the tone, right? The fuck there.
That truly, that's a conversation right there. I'd love to date you, but I'm in a relationship. Also, here's some paperwork.
Yeah. So they get married. Linda and Lawrence, Linda and Larry. We'll go with Larry. We'll go. With, I don't know if he calls himself Larry Meany or not, but he does now. Linda and Larry get married. They are living together for about 5 years or so, up until October 2nd, 1980. During the course of that time, they have two kids, Paul and Lauren. It goes into the medical history. They're both born by cesarean, everything like that. And then October of 1980, for some reason, there is trouble in paradise.
All right.
Linda and Larry separate. Now they get back together in June of 1981. So they're separated for a little under a year. They get back together. And when they get back together, you know, Larry's like, Linda, sweetie, I just want you to know why we was apart. It's Louisiana. While we was part of, I done got my dick wet.
As you tell any relationship you're jumping back into, it's always a good springboard point.
Right, like, you know, while we were separated, I had me some sex. It was, I will not say it was good, but it wasn't bad either. All right.
Adequate is a word I learned.
The understatement of the Decade Award for the 90s has to go to the next line in this case, which was, Mrs. Meany was upset about it.
Oh, upset that their relationship that did not exist had a non-existent cheating moment. Understood. Like, got it.
Like, and he's going, he's telling her, you know, I had one affair while we were separated, and she got upset. Okay, yeah.
That's not an affair. You were separated.
Well, no, like at this point in Louisiana, maybe it wasn't a fair under Louisiana law.
Under a legal system, which, by the way, did you know there's another state that just has its own court for its own fuck-ups? Yeah, anyway, I fucked someone.
So, Meany, who has testified at this point, actually, on the record, said she didn't really particularly question it or go into detail. Now, fucking no shit. By the way, fucking lie. I've been married for 15 years. That's a fucking lie.
I told her and we never spoke of it again.
She didn't ask a word about it. She didn't ask if it was Darlene, that bitch down at the trailer park. She didn't.
Not at all, no. And if you pull the other one, it's adequate sex. All right, got it.
Now, keep in mind, the caption of this case is Meany v. Meany. So no matter, we know at some point one of them has filed a lawsuit against the other one already, just from the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. So she learned, this is a direct quote. This is what I love. All right, in the civil world, before a lawsuit goes to trial, we have depositions.
Right? Okay.
And depositions are part of a discovery process. Like this whole idea of fucking Matlock bringing out new evidence and spread, that doesn't happen. In the civil world, we exchange information well ahead of trial. We schedule depositions, which are like mini examinations of proposed witnesses and people with information so we know what they testify to. Things like that. All right.
Okay.
A direct quote. She learned for the first time at Mr. Meany's deposition before trial that, in fact, he had engaged in sexual relationships with 4 or 5 unnamed women during this period.
Well, they were separated and he was a player, apparently.
Yeah. But can you just, you're already suing your husband and he's at the deposition. Like, what about this one person you had sex to? He goes, hey, it was more like 5, maybe 6.
Honestly, you saying that shatters where I thought this was going. Because in my mind, it was, honey, we were separated. I had sex with a woman. What? How dare you have sex with a woman? Wait, you're angry? Yeah. Well, I probably gave him your STD, so I'm suing your ass. I totally thought that's where that was going.
So
I probably gave him your warts, so I'm suing you.
Well, this is going to break it because the guy that she dated before him, before they got married, tested negative for warts.
Okay.
And tested negative for herpes. So he was STD free. He's the only person.
Now, the fact that you know that means it's part of the trial. I don't know where this is going. Yeah.
So
is this one taught in law school? Does the professor come in and is like, today we're going to talk about the wart case?
No, but it probably should be. And not for the reason you think, to be honest. When we get to it, you'll know.
I can't wait to see where this goes. What the fuck? Okay.
To go back to the history here, they get back together in June of 1981. However, as the court notes, they didn't really resume an active sex life. Mr. Meany saying they didn't have sex like honeymooners, that is, frequently. And Mrs. Meany saying, we only fucked one time.
My God.
And that was on March 1st, 1985, and that's the day our third child, Jessica, was conceived. Like, she has a fucking diary beside the bed, like, we fucked today.
Yesterday was Daisy Day. Today was fucking day.
Like her testimony is, in the 4 years since Larry and I got back together, we only fucked once. Well, and I know the exact day. But like, that actually adds a lot of credibility to her testimony for me. Like, he's like, you know, we didn't have sex a lot. It wasn't as much as it was before. You know, things have been a little rough. Duh. And I'm like, Mrs. Meany, how often do you do that? We fucked one time. It was March 1st, 1985. I was drunk. He got me a margarita.
See, I keep this calendar and put frowny faces on all the days.
MacGyver was on, and that Richard Dean Anderson, he makes me hot. And I looked at Larry, I said, fuck it, Larry, get a stick of bubble gum, we're making a sex swing.
You see, he was making a turning machine out of his shirt, so, you know, very important episode.
So she goes into labor in December of 1985, Mrs. Meany. She has their daughter, Jessica. As the epidural wears off, they notice a scratch or irritation. Something in her nethers does not look correct.
Okay.
All right. She mentions it to her husband. She eventually, like 2 years later, goes and seeks doctor's care for it. They've been back together for 6 years at this point. All right. The doctor's just kind of like, yeah, I don't fucking know what that is. It's not a yeast infection, and you're married, so I'm not testing for STDs. Gives her a cream. Cream does nothing. Eventually just kind of goes away. In 1988, she files, yeah, she's had enough of Larry. She files for a legal separation and then seeks a divorce based on adultery from Larry. Which is granted in 1990, all right, March of 1990. However, shortly after the separation, she goes to a doctor. She's like, I got three kids from this asshole. I don't want no more. So she looks at getting her tubes tied. All right. As well as getting a tummy tuck because she's getting divorced from Larry. She's getting back on the market. So she's like, right. You know, tie my tubes and tighten that shit up is what she's doing.
I gotta go to the bar.
Hey, well, good fucking for her. I mean, then she obviously was not like fucking Larry and her separated for a year. He comes by, he's like, I had sex with one person. He's like, okay, I had sex with like five or six people. And like they ask him at some point, like, did you use safe sex? He's like, yeah, sometimes. yeah, occasionally.
At the beginning.
Yeah. You know, if I'd only known him for a week or two, I didn't know him that well. Yeah, I sometimes used a condom.
Those things are expensive, hefty bags or not. They weren't as interested.
And how much credit?
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy.
Yeah, I mean, how much credit can we put in his stuff? Because he comes back, she's like, "You can tell me, Larry, were you with anybody while we weren't together?" And he's like, "One person. There was one person. That's it." And then, like, you know, years later, there were six people. That's it. Yeah, I probably used a condom.
I know I thought about them. Same thing.
I'm just kind of, Larry Meany does not sound like the type of guy who keeps a fucking pack of Trojans. Like, it sounds like he has one in his wallet, but it's for show.
Yeah, I know what safe sex is.
I'm familiar with the concept.
But have you heard about pulling out?
Yeah, safe sex, dentists, primary care. I'm familiar with all these things. I know what they are.
I keep them all in my wallet right here. See, I got a card and another square. Oh, and that's a wet napkin. Okay, close enough.
So an interesting thing is you heard me say divorce-free from fault. And do you know what that is?
No. One more time. Divorce-free from fault?
Divorce-free from fault. For a long time, the way family law worked was you couldn't just get a fucking divorce. You had to have a reason to get a divorce. Somebody had to have done something in the relationship that created grounds for divorce.
Really?
Yeah, it was called the fault-based divorce system. And that was the predominant for like... a long time. That was the predominant way. What we have now where people are like, let's just get a divorce, and they both go in and they sign some fucking paper, and they're like, yeah, neither of us are contesting this. We both want a divorce. It's an irretrievable breakdown of our marriage. We both want a divorce. That's but called.
At this time, you couldn't do that.
Well, I mean, probably at this time you could sometimes.
Okay.
There were situations where it was preferable to do that, like to go through a fault if you were looking at like alimony and shit like that, because sometimes they'd take fault into account.
Okay.
But it was a way, and actually, if you look historically, you'll actually see a history of people getting a divorce, and then after the divorce, like the divorce complaint alleges all this horrible shit, like that the husband was doing to the wife, right? But after the divorce, they get along perfectly, and you're like, well, but he was such a fucking horrible person. But those were actually called it divorce. Those were divorces where the grounds didn't exist. They weren't real grounds. It was they wanted a divorce, and the husband would be like, okay, say I did all this shit, and I'll just admit to it.
Oh, and then they just agree that they're not going to use it for any kind of alimony thing.
To the extent that there was an offense at law, like it was so common, there was an offense at law that if the court could prove you were making up fake grounds for a divorce of convenience, the court could charge you with shit.
What the fuck? So two people who wanted to get a divorce agreed to it. It's like, well, we need more, so you better hit me.
Yeah, you're lying. He's never fucking cheated on you.
Oh, my. Well, honey, I'm going to have to bite the bullet on this one because Karen has been looking sharp lately. So I'm going to head over there. Don't take this as an affront. It's just so that we can live in different houses. Now, what the fuck?
Now, over time, that changed. Obviously, no-fault divorces became a thing. So that's something that did happen. Pennsylvania actually adopted their no-fault divorce clause, though. And what year? What year do you think Pennsylvania adopted it?
Pennsylvania? Oh, my God. What, 1980?
Exactly.
Dear exactly. God, that is so
it was
messed
1980
up.
That Pennsylvania filed. We were one of the last states to adopt no-fault divorce here in PA.
Holy, that just sounds like it's causing more problems. Like, well, we fall out of love, but yeah, I still like you. So let's live together and always remember our hatred.
All right, so after they separate, finally, she goes to the doctor. She's getting the tummy tuck done. She's getting her tubes tied. And she's talking to the doctor about all this shit. And the doctor's like, you know, that sounds a lot like herpes 2.
Oh, God.
So he orders a culture, which, of course, comes back positive. She has herpes.
Okay. Now, she had already known this
time. No, she did not. She had no idea at this time.
Okay, I understood.
Yeah, we're like in 1988. So she receives this diagnosis of herpes in 1988. She calls Larry, her soon-to-be ex-husband, and says, I have herpes. And he's like, no, really? The court doctor said, according to her testimony, Mr. Meany expressed disbelief. Yeah, like, no, really? No, no. Then goes on to say, well, I had a drip itch once, and I went to go see a doctor in Laplace. So she, well, what the fuck do you mean you had a drip itch? And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to say any more about that. Honey, we're supposed to be working on our marriage. I'm not going to say anything more about that.
Like you just
get this image of Larry just kind of like, no, I don't know. Why are we making things so complicated? Yeah, I had a little drippage once. I went to go see a doctor.
Don't worry, I keep a wet nap inside my wallet. It's fine.
So, at this point, Mrs. Meany, who has just found out she's had herpes, she's gotten a rundown on how to have safe sex with herpes, all that. She goes to see a doctor because now she's got warts all over her nethers.
Oh, God.
And the doctor there looks at it and goes, okay, yeah, you have herpes. You also have HPV, which causes venereal warts.
Oh, dear God.
So she has to have a $21,000 laser surgery to remove the warts. She testifies the pain of the surgery is like sitting on a hot stove. Meanwhile, fucking Larry is over here. And he's like, I got no symptoms of any of this shit. I don't know about any of this. You know, but she's got, I'm going to go get myself tested. So he goes to the hospital and fucking surprise.
Shocking.
Just fucking surprise. Turns out Larry has herpes. They
would have never guessed.
Right. They can't rule out whether or not, because even though Larry doesn't have any warts, they won't rule out HPV because they have to do a urethral test, which is the fucking cotton swab on a stick straight up your pee hole. It's medical sounding is the best way to put it.
I went to college. I know what the swab of the pee hole is. What do you want? What?
So, like, by the way, this is how we talk normally. Like, if I was describing, he's like, what do you mean up the urethra? I'm like, I'm looking at alkali. I'm like, that's right, it's alkali. Hey, alkali, you know when people stick glass tubes up their dicks for fun? That, but with a cotton swab. And they say, we got to do that to rule out HPV. And Larry, of course, you are not doing that to me. That is not happening.
Yes.
So
it's a medical procedure. It's a kink.
So obviously, Mrs. Meany is just beside herself. You know, in the course since 1974, her life has been a fucking nightmare because of Larry. You know, they broke up for 6 years. They got back together. They were together for like seven more years. They had sex one fucking time after they got back together, and that one fucking time gave her HPV and herpes.
And she's out there trying to, getting the tummy tuck, getting ready to get back out there, and finds out her cooch is the Wicked Witch of the South.
Right. And she says to her counselor, who testifies this at trial, that the infection affected her feelings about herself, her body, her sexuality, and her future. She was experiencing a great deal of anger and sadness, and was reportedly hopeless about what her life was going to be after the divorce. The counselor was saying that Mrs. Meany would only be able to really get out of therapy when she felt able to get involved in another relationship and felt more confident about this. So what does Mrs. Meany do? Because Larry's a piece of shit. Larry's a piece of shit. She sues him.
I like. This is going right so far. This is going. Oh God.
So, she sues him under a theory of negligence. And negligence is a tort claim, which, as I discussed incorrectly last time, a tort claim is an injury against a person or property. It's where you either intentionally or negligently have done something that has caused an injury to someone else. And this is why I say this case may want to go into a law school textbook, because it gives just a wonderful breakdown of the elements of a negligence claim. All right.
Okay.
All right. So if I sue you for negligence, I, the plaintiff, have to prove that you had a duty of care, that you breached that duty of care, that your breach caused my injuries.
So now, is this breach that we're talking about that he did not go get an STD test?
We're doing the whole thing. We're doing the whole thing with this case. So it's duty, breach, causation, injuries, damages. A breach of a duty of care that you have that causes the injury that results in damages.
Holy shit. By him not going and getting this STD test, he did not care for her because they were in a sexual relationship, right?
Well, and here's the question. Because we call it the duty risk analysis. How do you get a duty of care?
How do you get a duty of care would be the not getting the test, right?
Well, what is a duty of care?
I would assume that you didn't do something that you should have definitely done that affects others.
A duty of care exists when a reasonable person similarly situated, we always say it's the mythical reasonable person, all right, would know that there is some risk of harm that should control their actions, and that the person is within the group of people that they should reasonably expect to be impacted by that risk of harm. All right, let's take it to a car accident. You're operating your car, right?
Okay.
Okay, you have a duty to operate your car safely, because if you don't operate your car safely, it can cause damage to people or property. Correct?
Okay, agreed.
All right. Now, let's say you're operating your car in an unsafe manner on the road, and then your car hits a bump, flies through the air, and takes out the pilot of a Cessna Cub.
Okay.
Is that within your duty of care?
Because you were the one who caused the accident in the first place.
Well, but who's reasonably foreseeable as being injured by you not operating your car safely? Sitting there, a reasonable person, not you specifically, not the driver of the car and what they would expect, but what a reasonable person similarly situated to in the same circumstances would believe. Who would you think is within the risk of harm if you don't operate your car safely? Would you think it's the pilot of a plane in the fucking air?
Yeah. No, okay, valid point.
You would think other drivers.
Yeah.
People, yourself, pedestrians.
Drivers, construction, but no, I would not go with
exactly.
a plane.
So that's the first thing. Second, if you don't know, should you have known about your duty of care?
Holy shit.
Like, let me ask a question. Is, and a lot of this goes into policy. All right, so here, her claim is that my husband had a duty of care not to pass on, under negligence standard, to make sure that I did not contract an STD from him. He breached that duty by having unprotected sex with me. It has caused the injury to me. I now have these STDs. As a result of that.
Okay.
And there are damages. I am incurring pain and suffering. I am incurring medical expenses. I'm going to continue incurring medical expenses. That's really the claim, right? And if you're on the defense side of this, you want to break one of those elements because the plaintiff has to prove every single element.
Okay.
All right. So
that probably, so they went with, he didn't know he had an STD.
That's one of them.
One of them. What else?
One of them. Remember how at the very beginning we said that her prior sexual partners had been tested as well?
Right. Okay.
Why would you do that?
In case she already had it.
In case she already had it.
Okay.
His first thing was, I didn't know. I did not have. We have actual knowledge and constructive knowledge. Actual knowledge is I know something. All right. If you come to me and you're my doctor, and you say, Boozy, you have an STD. I have actual knowledge I have that STD. Constructive knowledge is where a lot of the negligence claims come in. Because constructive knowledge is not, I actually knew this thing. But from all of the circumstances surrounding this, I should have known this thing. Any reasonable person should have known this thing. Or, with a very minimal amount of effort, I could have known this thing or known that I needed to know this thing.
Okay.
Okay. So, he first comes back and says, I had no idea I had an STD. I had no actual knowledge and nobody else would think that I had that knowledge, right?
Okay.
The court
but he had unprotected sex with five women, so it sounds like they're going to come back with that.
Well, let me ask though, does that really mean that? If you have no reason to believe any of those five women have an STD.
Son of a bitch. I mean.
And is that the precedent we want to set at law, really? That if you've ever had unprotected sex, you don't get a test to obtain actual knowledge, that any of your new partners could sue you for negligence?
I mean, maybe this is just part of being gay, but like, you just get STD tests anytime like that. That's like a quarterly thing. It blows my mind that it wouldn't be. But now that you say it that way, I didn't think precedence. Okay, I get what you're saying because you're right. But five different people.
Because the thing is, and you see this a lot in negligence cases. How big do you want to expand the duty? At what point have you made the duty so large that the burden on somebody to prevent breach is unconscionable and the risk of just multiplying litigation on it is too high.
Holy shit, yeah.
So courts are always, in negligence matters, trying to strike this balance here of saying, when do you know you have, when do you have the duty of care and who does it attach to? We're not going to give it the broadest possible interpretation because we think that that's against public, we call it against public policy. Okay?
I get that. Oh, wow.
Hey, let me put it this way, because it's almost like the slippery slope argument. You said he had sex with five women in the 80s in Louisiana. All right?
Okay.
Sometimes, let's take him at face value and say most of the time he used a condom. Maybe two times he didn't. The two times he didn't use a condom, should that be enough that now he needs to go out and obtain that actual knowledge to protect everybody afterwards?
Fuck. No, I absolutely see your point.
And narrow it down even more. Say it's a guy who has sex one time. They lose their virginity to somebody with herpes. They never sleep with anybody else. They never get a test. Irresponsible as hell. Yes, I agree. You and I both. We agree. We grew up in the same era.
I definitely agree, but now I'm definitely seeing where I never think precedence. You've brought that up before. And just the idea of, by the way, if we do this, the can of worms were okay. Oh, God, I'm so worried she's going to lose this case now. All right, continue. Well,
stop being worried, because I'll spoil you. She doesn't lose.
Yay!
Okay, she does not lose. The court comes back and says, this court recognizes as a matter of public policy that each person has a duty to use reasonable care to prevent the spread of harmful communicable diseases, including sexually transmitted diseases.
All right. Okay.
And in 1992, actually, Louisiana put into effect a law that said it is unlawful for any person to inoculate or infect another person in any manner with a venereal disease or to do any act which will expose another to inoculation or infection with a venereal disease.
Okay.
Now, the court kind of declines here to say it's that makes it strict liability. Strict liability is a term at law where it basically takes away the duty analysis. It takes away duty and breach. It is just
because you're saying you broke a law. But
yeah,
then that
this is you automatically have a duty. We're not going to do the analysis on anything. You automatically have a duty. The fact that this person has been, it's you basically are going down to causation, injury, damages at this point. The fact that this person has an injury with damages that was caused by your breach is a strict liability offense. Nothing else goes into that analysis. And the way you read that law, you could say, okay, well, he had an STD that he gave to her. That makes it strict liability. Doesn't matter whether there was the duty and breach analysis and the duty risk analysis and whether he should have known and did he take the appropriate actions and things like that. You see strict liability a lot with like things that are inherently unsafe, like storing dynamite in a warehouse is the classic example of strict liability. No matter what, that's always dangerous. No matter what level of care you take, you're never going to overcome the risk of storing dynamite in a warehouse.
They never saw any of the Looney Tunes if they're storing dynamite in a warehouse.
But, and you actually, believe it or not, you see that a lot with keeping exotic, dangerous animals. They treat a lot of jurisdictions treat that as a strict liability offense.
No, you can't have an alligator when you have kids.
Right. They're like, you know, if you have a tiger in your backyard and it mauls the child next door, that's strict liability. Tigers are inherently dangerous and there's no amount that you can take to really reduce the risk. All right. But the court in Louisiana declined to say that's strict liability. They made her go through and say, prove the duty and the breach of the duty, the failure to act with due diligence and reasonable care. But what they do say on this is the evidence goes towards Mr. Meany having a duty and reasonable knowledge that he had that duty and that he breached that duty. Why? two things. You hit on one earlier, which was he had multiple sexual partners. And he wasn't sure he always used protection. But bigger than that, all right, he had drippage.
Oh, fuck, he knew. Oh, my God. Yeah, I didn't catch that.
He had drippage that made him go seek a doctor's care that he never informed her about. And the court, relying in part on these things, said it was reasonable for him to know or suspect that he had symptoms that suggested some kind of venereal disease based on those things. So the duty was imposed against him that he should either not have sex with her or that he should have warned her about those symptoms. Why is that important? What do you think the difference outcome would have been if he had said, by the way, I had drippage, or I had sex with not one person, but several people before we got back together? And she said, okay, and then didn't insist on safe sex.
So then that throws the burden onto her.
Onto her. Why? Assumption of risk.
My God.
If you know all the facts and you know the potential for harm and you still engage in the activity, you have assumed the risk of the harm.
Okay.
Because it is reasonably within the results you could expect. You see that a lot in sporting events, actually. When someone gets injured playing football, a lot of times a court will come back and go, what did he get? He got like a fucking broken arm and he's trying to sue the school? No. You know, a broken arm is an assumed risk of playing football. Anybody playing a high contact sport should expect they may break a bone. That's an assumed risk.
High contact sport should expect herpes. Come on, we've got this.
Now, does that mean all risks? Of course not. If that same football player gets hit by a car driven by his drunken coach at practice, he hadn't assumed the risk of that. You know, if Mr. Meany had driven a car into the bedroom and just revved the fucking engine on her after she said, oh, it's okay, honey, you got a drippy dick. Happens to everybody. Stick it in.
Now, excuse me, don't kink shame. Vroom.
Yeah, but if he had done that, she didn't assume the risk of getting hit by a car. She may have assumed the risk of an STD. In this case, though, he had circumstances that were within his knowledge and that in any reasonable person's knowledge, sitting with that, would suggest maybe he has an STD. Maybe he should find that out before having sex with her. And in that case, the Louisiana court on appeal, the Louisiana Supreme Court said, we're going to give her the damages.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. I absolutely love that it came down to a guy who's like, well, I'll tell her about one of my bitches and definitely not the other. And all he had to do was one bitches and STDs. Now it's his own fault.
She was originally awarded $125,000.
Okay.
The appeal, start. The appeals court didn't let her keep that. Why did they not let her keep that? Remember how he said, "No, I'm not going to let you put. I'm not going to let you sound my dick for medical purposes."
Okay.
All right. Well, that was for the HPV, for the venereal warts coming from HPV. Because the jury gave her the 125 for everything. For the herpes, for the warts, for the HPV, for the pain and suffering, the whole nine yards. All right? Okay. However, the Supreme Court of Louisiana said, yeah, but there was no evidence he had HPV.
Oh, his negligence helped him out. I fucking hate this.
There was evidence he had herpes. We can say the herpes. The HPV... we can't say that part because he never got the test that said whether or not he had HPV. They reduced her damages from $125,000down to $93,676 at that point. by saying, you know, we're going to take out, you know, some of the medical expenses and shit like that for the laser surgery and for the pain and suffering and for the mental anguish, where we can attribute it directly to the HPV instead of the venereal warts. Now, an interesting thing, though, this same case, all right, let's assume there's no other changes in the law. None whatsoever. Everything regarding STDs and negligence is exactly the same, which, by the way, is not true. For a long period of time, courts wouldn't let you sue in negligence for an STD.
Like, not at all?
Not at all.
Holy shit.
You know why?
Why? Don't say AIDS epidemic.
No. You highlighted it a little bit earlier. It was an assumed risk of having sex was that you may get a social disease.
Oh, my God. Oh, fucking health class from the 80s is alive and well. Oh, God.
So this was actually one of the recent developments, like in the terms of law, remembering how fucking old law is. That you could bring actions for negligence for transmission of an STD in these circumstances, because it went from, if you have sex, maybe you get an STD, maybe your dick fucking turns purple, blows up to the size of a balloon, and explodes. Who knows? It's your own fucking fault. Don't put it there. Don't.
Oh, my God.
Baby Jesus cries, and God will make your dick fall off.
The only safe sex is no sex. That's how furry porn happens. That's how we find that stuff.
Oh, I think we should remember that in this case. This was not like Mrs. Meany wasn't out running around. Her husband was out running around. Like, there's nothing indicating that Mrs. Meany, during the course of her marriage, was having intercourse with anybody other than her husband.
God.
So, like, that opinion only works if both are involved. Now, that has changed. But let's assume that the STD law is how it is right there in 1994 in Louisiana. All right?
Okay.
But let's transplant it to 1890. Every other fact is the same. Except maybe he's got, like, fucking syphilis. All right?
Okay.
He gives him syphilis. Right. All right? She sues him. Let's assume every other piece of law in this case is the same. Does she win?
Oh my, from what you just told me, it sounds like no, that the case is thrown out because she's suing on the basis of an STD.
Well, let's assume the STD law is no different.
Okay.
It's exactly the same, 1890. Does she win?
I swear to Christ, if the answer to this is no, women can't sue in the 1800s.
Exactly.
No!
It's actually not even that. It's an old doctrine of law that, thankfully, is not really applied anymore. Most states have gotten rid of it. An old doctrine of law known as intraspousal immunity.
Not liking that you said most states. I'm really not liking that you said most states.
I am saying most states because I have not looked directly into whether any state still maintains any form of interspousal immunity.
You can say Louisiana. We already made fun of Louisiana. We haven't checked Louisiana yet.
Intraspousal immunity actually goes back to England. Yeah, as I say, English common law is the basis for most of the law in the United States, except Louisiana most times. There was a concept in English common law that we all know about, we hear about all the time. It's like married women couldn't own property and married women couldn't own businesses. The reason that was a concept was at the time of marriage, the law viewed a woman and her husband as a single entity with the husband in charge.
Fuck. You know, I mean, like, I've watched old, like a lot of just wonderful old TV shows, and I've seen that, but I never thought of it in those terms, like a legal term. Like, legally, you're one person. That just doesn't, simply because I can count. So I can't do much, Boozy, but I can. Those are two people.
Intraspousal immunity at that point would have meant that if she tried to sue her husband while married to him, or even for anything that happened during the marriage, the law would say, no, you're suing yourself. You can't do that.
Holy shit.
What ended up happening? That was for most torts, intentional or negligent, which would include battery, and for most property claims. Now, it wasn't all ass backwards, because once courts start saying, yeah, no, intraspousal immunity is still a thing. You know, that shit we had back in the 1700s still happens. In the early 20th century, every single state passed something called the Married Woman's Act, which gave them limited rights to sue their husband in certain areas.
That took way too long.
That was the early 20th century, and it still didn't give them full rights to sue their husband. For everything. It was limited rights to sue your husband in limited. Like, if you have property, you inherit it from your family, and your husband gambles it away, maybe you can sue him.
Oh, my God. Hopefully, if there's spousal abuse involved, maybe
nope.
We can try to...
Actually, no.
Fuck you.
Most Married Women's Acts did not cover intentional torts.
Well, you can get daddy's farm back, but you're going to have to get it back with two black eyes. What the fuck?
Now, states began abrogating or doing completely away with interspousal immunity in the latter half of the 20th century. It did start abrogating is where we're not getting rid of it, but we're limiting its impact. You know, we're saying it applies. It doesn't apply to this one. It doesn't apply to this one. You do that all the time. I believe it was New Jersey that had a wonderful court case on intraspousal immunity, saying this is, you know, here's the history of it, and here is us saying interspousal immunity does not apply in New Jersey anymore. It was an outright rejection of it. It's a wonderful case that ended that in New Jersey. You want to guess the date of that case?
Oh, God, New Jersey.
Just
I'm going to go with the staple, 1980.
2002.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
And that is the case of Meany v. Meany in Louisiana regarding negligence claims for the transmission of STDs between husband and wife.
Well, I'm glad she got something out of looking like the Wicked Witch of the South. What the shit?
He is a piece of shit, isn't he? My God.
Truly. Well, I'm leaking all over the place, but you know what, Karen? I'm going to tell you about just this one. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I just love that. Look, Larry, I just need to know, when we got back, but when we was apart, you have any medical problems? Because I got herpes. No! Really? Don't know how. I mean, I had a little drippage once.
Holy shit.
I just imagine this poor lady, like, because your spouse always knows. So somewhere in the back of her mind, he's like, I only slept with one person. She's like, you lying piece of shit.
Oh, no shit, right?
But over like the next 7 years or so, she probably is like, okay, maybe that's true. Then they break up again, and she's got herpes. And he's like, well, I had a little drippage. I'm really surprised, though. And then they go through the trial. They go into depositions. And then this bastard, though, so they're like, it was one woman. And he's like, okay, maybe it was like four or five.
Oh, my God. I just... That poor woman. That poor woman. You know, and she probably believed him when he said one, because he doesn't sound like a guy who can come past that.
Yeah.
One, two, waffle, and nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, shit, he said one, but that's just because he lost nine of his fingers to a gator.
Yeah, he's not very good at that whole negligence law.
He could have used
nine
his shoes.
Two pins.
He could have used his shoes, but you need at least two fingers to undo the laces.
Velcro. He wears Velcro.
And as somebody in the chat for the people who are listening later comes in with goes, he can count to potato.
He can count to potato. Oh, God.
But that is Meanie v. Meanie. Alkali, what do you think about that one?
I am horrified by our legal system, but glad it seemed to work out in the end on this one.
Right. I mean, like, that's the way to put it, right?
Maybe we can let women sue. They can't sue themselves. You're missing the point, Ted.
Now, earlier we talked about the Philadelphia DA Larry Krasner, right?
Yeah.
And you remember how I talked about the Philadelphia Police Department was upset with him because he hamstrung them, and that's such a shame because they have such a history of good works like bombing an entire city block, right?
True. When you're good at your job, you know it.
You know what Philadelphia is not too good at after that?
What's that?
Actually paying the settlement money and rebuilding that city block even after 20 years and agreeing to do so.
Holy shit.
And that will be our case for episode 27 of Boozy's Legal Funhouse, how the city of Philadelphia went to court to fight to avoid paying damages from the move bombing of the 1980s.
Oh, that's going to be an angry episode. Understood.
Until next time, I am your host, the Boozy Badger, Boozy Barrister. Alkali is my certified legal layman. Alkali, tell the people where they can find you when you're not here.
You can find us streaming about 4 times a week on twitch.tv/AlkaliandZanny. That's Zanny with an X. Please join us sometime. We play billiards. We sit there and bitch about the world. You know, bad times had by all, but we're drunk.
And if you do like the Legal Funhouse, you can always support it over at patreon.com/lawyersandliquor, or just go to the podcast provider of your choice, leave us 5 stars, and say whatever the fuck you want. I don't care. It apparently helps the algorithm. At least I'm being more honest with you than Mr. Meanie was.
Also, let's be honest. Your patron has a drippage. Thank you so much for inviting me, friend.
We will see you next time here on Boozy's Legal Funhouse. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Go on, everyone.